Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 2, Episode 6, The Ricks Must Be Crazy. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Rick treats his grandkids to movie and ice cream before finding out the battery on his space car has died. Rather than getting a jump, Rick goes inside the battery, revealing that he's created and enslaved an entire microverse and its citizenry to power his vehicle. The reason the battery is dead is said citizenry is pursuing a path of energy independence, leading Rick to engage in some very unorthodox and immoral car repair while Morty goes native. While Rick and Morty go under the hood, Rick tasks the space car with a simple directive: keep Summer safe. Senseless death, maiming, emotional scarring, and a landmark peace deal between humankind and horrifying giant telepathic spiders ensue.
All right, Aaron, what do you think about this?
I give this episode 11 out of 10 9/11s because it's amazing. It has a great A plot. It has a great B plot. The Keep Summer Safe is just so fucking dark. Honestly, every part of this, every aspect of this episode is pretty goddamn dark, but also fucking hilarious too.
Sure. I'm trying to decide which is my favorite. The incredibly, maybe the darkest shit that Rick and Morty's ever done in that B plot. When that child melts to goo in that father's hands, it's impressively dark.
And I
think it might be some of my favorite stuff in all of Rick and Morty.
Mm-hmm.
That B plot, the A plot also, like you said, it's really, it's pretty creative. Like, it's not stuff that hasn't ever been done before, but the way that they weave it into the story, I liked.
I know that it's kind of been done. I can think of a Star Trek plot or two. What I love about Rick and Morty is it's not afraid to just run things to its logical conclusions. Because fundamentally its hero is some amoral, fucking insane Time Lord, and it doesn't care if you hate him or laugh at him or whatever. So, the idea that he destroys an entire microverse, two microverses, I guess, because the other guy had a primitive microverse going inside, and then continues to enslave the society, and it all ends in a fist fight as he spits on the guy's beaten body. It's just, that really tickles my dark heart, I guess. Okay, what do you want to tackle first? The space battery or Keep Summer Safe?
Let's do the space battery.
Okay.
Rick's a hypocrite. That's where we start, right?
Right, and the fact that when Morty points that out, like, Rick immediately says, oh, yes, hypocrisy is the wedge I can use to defeat this guy, not realizing that it failed to defeat him.
It's amazing to me the sort of mental gymnastics that Rick is doing in this episode. Or it's not even mental gymnastics, because he just doesn't give a shit, right? He is one of the most apathetic, nihilistic people in the universe, and he'll smash your microverse, your miniverse, whatever, if it will buy him 3 seconds to get back to his ship.
Sure.
To force you into subservience once again. He will use hypocrisy as a weapon, even though he himself is a hypocrite. It's kind of astounding to watch Rick work in this
episode. Are we supposed to understand that, like, these nested scientists inside these mini and teeny verses, respectively, because I respect the pedants, are we supposed to understand that they are literally just on the way to becoming Ricks themselves?
Yeah, I think they're supposed to be
Ricks.
The white
blobby guy kills himself because the realization is horrific. But it seems like the Colbert, the Veep guy, he's well on his way.
It's Zeep.
Veep. Oh, Zeep.
The show is Veep. The character
Zeep. Yeah, Zeep Zanflorp. He's well on his way. It just, maybe he's not quite as old and developed and in his guile and treachery.
Yeah.
But he's a quick study.
He's trying.
Yeah.
These are all supposed to be like stand-ins for Rick. And it's also amazing to see Rick when confronted with, sort of a mirror image of himself. like how that competition versus cooperation aspect comes into play. Like he just immediately wants to eliminate all competition to himself.
Right.
It's crazy.
It reminds me of like it's not just he reacts this way with himself. Like when we saw in the episode in the season premiere this where you know time gets divided. Like once four Ricks get divided, they instantly start plotting to kill themselves because in the back of their mind, that's always been the logical thing to do.
Yeah.
And I like how they kind of somewhat subvert that by having them play nice to get out of the Teenyverse, mm-hmm. you know, work together and compliment each other and realize, oh, how much they could accomplish together. And then Zeep instantly betrays them. But also Rick knows it because that's probably the thing that I don't understand what maybe Rick was just going to do the same thing and Zeep pulled the ripcord on the plan first, but how utterly shocked and surprised Rick is at this treachery.
And then, you know, like you said, following it to its logical conclusion, the resolution of it is awesome, where mm-hmm. he's just like, you know, once they beat Zeep out of their microverse,
right.
Rick knew the battery was either going to work or it wasn't, mm-hmm. and Zeep knew the battery was going to work or it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And so when they turn it on, it works miraculously.
And I like the idea that, like, because I was thinking, like, why? Because even Morty is like, you know, why the savage beating? Why the spitting at the end? I wonder if there's an element that, like, Rick needed to utterly convince how little he cared about him so that when he thinks the thing through and decides to get everybody back on their Veeble Blorps or whatever, cranking out that energy because he knows that Rick just doesn't give a fuck. He's killed two mini verses.
And for some people, I would say that was a show, right? He had to put on the appearance that he really doesn't give a shit about him.
Right.
But with Rick, I truly believe that he does not give a shit.
Right.
And he will toss that battery out and make something new if it doesn't work for him.
Yeah, of course he will.
If it's slightly that's the thing about Rick. He is willing to destroy universes if it slightly inconveniences him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, entire civilizations just trashed.
It's also really funny, like, they do a lot of, like, passing commentary on other science fiction, like the slow extending ramps. Like, you gotta extend slow because it really gets their dicks. And a lot of these tropes we just...
Too fast.
Yeah, we just take for granted that, like, okay, when aliens land, there's going to be this slow, elaborate unveiling. The idea that Rick is an alien to this universe, mm-hmm. but thinks he has to put on these fucking feeble... you know, feelers to look alien.
Yeah, and then Zeep does that too, right? So he's got, like, this elaborate costume.
Yeah, it says something about, like, this really insanely intelligent person, but, like, you know, they're emotional. I don't know if it's... because everything could just be a joke. But I like to think that there is some joke about, like, Rick's emotional intelligence such that he is so lacking in empathy or so lacking in ability to put someone, his mind into someone that's not his own, that he thinks that, well, I have to dress up as an alien or they're not going to buy me as an alien.
Right.
And then Zeep takes that even, like, he's got, like, a realistic weird alien costume. I would love to see the little blobby dude's idea of what to take on the alien. Because it's, every little, like, nested doll was a little bit nicer than Rick, maybe. Or maybe that guy just hasn't had the time, you know, the death of his father and all of his sacrifices hasn't really sunk in for him yet. But I also like the whole idea that, you know, you can tell a bunch of lies to aliens when you land and you can kind of reshape their culture and, you know, the peace among worlds stuff and the... I love, like, the old film reel footage of the alien newscast where they're talking about how Rick Sanchez made contact and all the aliens are happy and they're flipping each other off and, like, all these poses for posterity and they're flipping the birds left and right. It's great.
My favorite part of that entire joke is Morty walking down that ramp for the first time. The look on his face as he's flipping these people off.
Yeah.
He so doesn't want to do this.
Yeah, it's so fucking juvenile.
And then, also
the other kind of, I'm watching a lot of Star Trek at the same time I'm watching Rick and Morty. Don't know why, just worked out that way. But this Eek Barber Durkle, it reminds me a lot of, like, the episode where Picard goes to a planet and the universal translator can't handle a language that only talks in metaphors. Like, you know, like Darmok when the wall fell. That means something, you stupid fucking universal translator. Just... what the fuck? Like, a series of 10 words is harder to dissect than an alien alphabet and verb tenses and...
I guess so.
Borrowed words from other also alien languages on the same planet? I don't
know. That makes me want to go back and look through Star Trek episodes to see if the computer on the Enterprise understands metaphor.
And why can't Data? Why can't Data use contractions?
Yeah.
Why can't Data use contractions? Yeah. There's tons of those. And I like that, like, Rick and Morty takes shots at all these, you know, pastiches of weird alien stuff that doesn't make sense anymore, but we all grew up with it. But yeah, it's, and then, you know, when they go to their wooden Iron Man suits,
it's great.
And Rick's got his fucking snake, his snake holster. It's so great.
Yeah. Is that from Get Swifty, that
I
episode?
Yeah. When there's no more snake makery.
Uh-huh.
And Rick's assertion of my God's the biggest dick that never existed. and then finally they take shots at Avatar. And I love how
I've never seen Avatar. What are the shots?
Holy shit. Oh, right. You haven't. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a big spirit tree and all the native aliens commune with it. And I love how they're going down that path of like of Morty just fully assimilating. And then he gets halfway through. He's like, you got to get the fuck out of here. These people are crazy. They eat every third baby because they don't understand how science works. They smell like piss. I have to jerk off the curvy pieces of driftwood. I love it.
My question coming away from this episode is, the next time this battery malfunctions, does Rick just toss it? Does he go back in to investigate? Like, if you're Zeep and you're planning your escape, how long do you wait before you try this all again? You try and lure Rick back in to destroy him.
That is a great question. And the fact that, as far as we know, Rick is just going to roll the dice on this increasingly advanced alien civilization with a very smart person that now has a extremely personal vendetta against him.
Yeah.
And he's just going to let that unwind in his hood is a fascinating question.
I think it's his confidence that he has thoroughly beaten these people down.
Yeah.
And then there are questions about, like, how far away from slavery do you have to get for it to, like, for you to justify it?
Oh, no, is very clearly... for those of us living in first worlds that have benefited greatly from colonization, imperialization, there's a lot of...
I was going to say, like, clearly my line is somewhere between owning a plantation and an iPhone. Like,
right.
It's somewhere in the middle.
Right. And
probably closer to iPhone.
Yeah. No, it's like, that's what's so great about it is that it makes you think about it. Yeah, because who of us haven't done, like, if we're all working for society and all this is all making us, this is all raising the boat higher, but, you know, some people's boat still includes 20-hour-a-day child factory worker shifts.
Yeah.
Starting to sound like slavery with extra steps. Do you want to talk, is there anything more, any more juice to squeeze from the A-plot, or should we move on to B? Which I don't know will be as big a discussion because it's just how awesome Rick's car is.
I mean, I want to talk about the fucked up nature of it all.
Okay.
I mean, that baby. Oh, man, that kid melting.
I just...
That sticks with me.
It is, because it's like when you... It's such an effective use of dread. And, like, if you shot this with real people in Hollywood special effects, this would be the makings of a great horror plot. But you animate it, and it's just like... you know, it puts enough cream in the coffee that you can choke it down. But yeah, like when she said, when Summer forbids, like, you know, hurting anyone, and then the car's like, developing psychological countermeasures, gestating. Like, and Summer's like, wait, what?
Gestating?
And then that pod rolls out, holy fuck. And what the car says, all of you have loved ones, all can be brought back, all can be taken away. Keep Summer safe. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good. I actually, you know, it's funny because, like, I don't know how deep the writers went on this, but I was reading some discussions of people talking about just how fucking dark this part was. And one guy said, or one person on the internet said, man, if I was that, you know, SWAT team commander, I'd just put a gun in your mouth right then and there and end it. And someone said, actually, part of the psychological profile was probably selecting a person who was strong enough to withstand the psychological and wouldn't kill themselves because that would piss Summer off.
Yeah. And
so it's like the car's going through. It's like, okay, who's traumatized enough that this will completely incapacitate them, but they won't immediately put a gun in their mouth and kill themselves in front of Summer?
They'll still be around to convince the police force not to attack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the fact that, like, I just love how sassy the car is with Summer's kind of like, you know, snot-nosed, I want you to keep me safe, but, you know, on my terms. And it's like, you know, this isn't, you're not making this very easy. Or she's like, I'm unable to destroy this army. To clarify, I'm quite able to destroy this army, but not under your philosophical constraints.
Yeah, I wonder if there's some commentary about violence being the first option that the car reaches for here to protect Summer.
Right.
Where it's only at the very end, when all of its hands have been completely tied,
that it
goes toward diplomacy. Yeah. It's crazy to me to look back at that episode and go, what if they're saying something?
Like, what if violence just wasn't an option?
Yeah.
Like, what if you had to? You were forced by some kind of greater being to do the hard work of, okay, what do you need? What do we need?
Could you still get it done?
Yeah.
Maybe it would ruin your ice cream, but it might make a lot of people happier.
Well, and that's the other thing is, like, there's certainly segments of our society that are like Rick that even with, like, that ruined ice cream is too much a price to pay with peace with the horrifying spider monsters.
Yeah.
Like, they'd rather a couple of their kids walk in their webs every few years than to sully the best ice cream in the multiverse with flies.
For sure.
And they're Rick is one of those people, obviously.
obviously. And then there's the tag on this episode, which they call it a tag. We call it a stinger.
That's what they always called him on, like,
post-credit sequence.
Yeah, that's always called him in Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is why. And probably it means a very particular thing I'm misusing.
It's just Morty.
And the great thing is we recorded all these in advance, so I will be completely immune to the feedback until around season 3. So if it pisses you off, buckle in. You've got another half season of me getting this thing wrong. But yes, the stinger.
it's just Morty turning into a car like Rick said he could. And I guess that's a thing that Morty can do now.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can control it, if he has any will over whether or not he turns into a car.
Doesn't seem fully like,
no,
like
he tries earlier in the episode and it doesn't work.
Just a random daydream at school.
Yeah.
Although I wonder, like, a part of my headcanon is like him thinking, I wonder if I can turn myself into a car, and that's enough to, like, without all the stress of the situation, he just randomly does it.
Are they making, like, an awkward boner joke? Awkward boner in class joke?
I mean, it's definitely something you can read into the situation.
Like, whoops, turn into a car again. Shit, that's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
It crushes
a young woman in front of him, so that's the three-part darkness of this episode, apparently. Uh-huh.
Human music. I like it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday, covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, Jim, I think it's time for us to open up a portal to dimension BM77, where we access, as we do, behind-the-scenes details, trivia, and spoilers potentially for future episodes. If that's not your jam, then get out with your fly-flavored rum raisin right now. This is the first, and I think only, episode where both Beth and Jerry are entirely absent.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I didn't even realize that until I was either. Reading commentary on the episode. What's that say about Beth and Jerry?
It says they're not necessary, I guess, to make a good episode of Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
I don't know. Rick and Morty are probably the only essential ones.
I wonder if there's been, if they ever will attempt to do an episode without Rick, because it's not even that they're absent, they're not even mentioned. Yeah. I wonder if there ever be an episode where Rick or Morty are not.
It'd be hard to do one without Rick. I mean, maybe. Morty could get a hold of the portal gun. And
well, I was thinking
Summer
also, like, if depending on how they do this, and this will be, I'm jumping way, I'm on BM777, that like, you know, one of the cliffhangers in season 3 is whether Beth replaced herself with an android clone and then went to go freely roam the universe and fulfill her adventures. Like, I could totally get behind a whole episode of kind of like the Chronicles of Beth. You know, she's on some weird planet and she's developed some kind of, you know, horse surgeon Beth version of Rick's technology. And I think I could get down with that. That'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, a whole Jerry episode. No.
I mean, we kind of had a micro, like we had a whole B plot with Jerry, right?
With Jerry Burry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know if you could do a whole episode with just Jerry. You probably could.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will say this. Enough that if an entire Jerry episode escaped the writer's room, I would have faith in watching it.
Right.
Because, like, I think the one thing I have come away with covering this show and doing a little bit more reading and a little bit more thinking about it is just how, like, utterly convinced I'm that the writer's room is way more terrified of fucking up Rick and Morty than we are of Rick and Morty being fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, it shows the commentary. They're talking about how hard this episode was to write.
The episode apparently made entirely of sweat.
Yeah.
Which, also a first for, you know,
good
wasn't...
joke, but point taken. Like, yeah. I have to imagine some of these episodes, you know, you spend just a ton of time on and you get to the end and you're never quite, you don't ever quite have a really good feeling about it.
Mm-hmm.
Those have got to be the hardest to release.
Yeah, and as you could tell that they had, like, a lot of these solid ideas, right? Like, hey, you know, this person doing the car voice is fun. We should have a whole episode of the car and then the protection and then, you know, like, oh, we should have this multiverse thing. And and they talked about, like, the tortured iterations of it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the fact is this was originally, I guess, Rick developing it in his garage. So it was like all this, like, kind of bottle episode where it's inside a microverse in a garage, but there wasn't any stakes. And it's like, man, it's a great idea, but what's the engine that makes this thing go? And how long it took. And there's also this talk of, like, every time, and this, I think this is more for the next episode. They talk about one of the things that they learned through this kind of torturous season 2 and 3 was that, you know, the temptation is anytime they had to re-break an A plot, they'd have to go and refactor into B plot.
Right.
And maybe sometimes that isn't entirely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love those kind of behind the scenes detail. Cause I don't know, I guess I've written 2 books now. I guess I'm among other things, a writer.
Yeah.
I like this, you know, like, hearing really talented writers, talk about the process. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm glad they took out Dr. Spork. did you hear them mention that? They said there was a lot of Star Trek stuff in here with the alien civilization, and they had a character named Spork at one point.
Right.
Good call taking that out.
Yeah, because they had so many great non-specific shots at Trek adjacent, Doctor Who adjacent, you know, Battlestar, that you know, having Spork on there, it's almost like... Two on the nose, two on the
yeah.
That
doesn't feel very Rick and Morty to me. Mm-hmm. Although I think back to, like, Dr. Zenon Bloom and stuff like that, and it's like, okay, well, they're getting pretty damn close to just parodying specific characters.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it is more.
Also, two notable guest stars. Alan Tudyk was Chris, the president of the Microverse, which I loved. I love the second Rick materialized outside the universe. He picks up the miniverse and throws it on the ground, and the president just kind of, like, because he's made a feast, he's just like, "Whoa, bad tour or something." Like, this, he just takes all in stride. I love them. Also, Nathan Fielder, the voice of the blobby teeny-verse scientist, which he's immediately recognizable. He's just, you know, fucking Alan Tudyk. It turns out not only really talented starship pilot. Man of 1,000 voices.
Yeah. No, he's great in, I think it's Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yep.
I fucking love that movie so much.
He's got so many voice credits to his name at this point. He's done video games. He's done movies. He was King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph. He was the stupid chicken in Moana. I can't remember the last time I saw his voice. It was probably in that anime girl robot movie. Yeah, you know, the one.
There are a lot of those.
There's one in the last 6 months.
I think when you say animated robot movie, it's almost always a girl,
right?
Because it's almost always a guy writing it.
Battle Titan AE, I think is what it was.
Okay, that sounds right.
There's a couple of
whoa. You're gonna move on. You're burying the lead, man.
What's the lead?
Stephen Colbert.
Oh well, yeah, we talked about him in the main non BM7. I closed that portal.
I missed that.
So this connects to my next point, which is I am somewhat surprised that we've never seen Zeep Zanflorp again, because he has real Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, villain potential.
Like a villain that is almost equal to the main protagonist, and he's
got a
vendetta.
Well, now that the Council of Ricks are out of the way, because they were that for a long time, right?
True.
So now the Council of Ricks are out of the way, maybe?
Maybe. Or it's been, yeah. I with 7 more seasons to go, the idea of this guy popping up where you least expect it, and like the possibilities are almost endless, because like time goes slower in there. But maybe he finds a way to counteract that. Like, you know, what if he speeds up time so he comes back older, but he's got so much more experience now. He's organized his entire civilization into an army. There's a lot of, and this is all happening in Rick's hood, there's a lot of spicy potentials there.
Yeah.
Then this is where our dreams are dashed when we get to some part of the episode in season 3 where they clearly established that Rick's destroyed the battery.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm kind of surprised. The other thing is maybe Stephen Colbert is just so busy now, because it seemed like he was a hard guy to get in the first place. Like having him be a recurring villain role, you know, that's maybe a big commitment.
Just get Alan Tudyk. I bet he could do a good Stephen Colbert voice.
Yeah, just get the best Stephen Colbert impersonator, which probably is Alan Tudyk. There was the final piece of trivia that I have is there's some fun Easter eggs outside of the Egan Cinema, which is itself an Easter egg. That was a reference to one of the animators on the show, or maybe one of the directors, right? It's one of the Roiland's friends on staff. But there was two movie posters outside. One was Three Brothers, which obviously sequel to Two Brothers. And then there's French Toast starring a piece of toast, one of the SNL regulars. So he's got like a James Bond comedy role, apparently. Or maybe he's making a turn to serious actor.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Mineron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @BaldMove. See you next time.